From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. Poltergeist stories. These are true ghost stories. The first one is from Brazil. The stone throwing, common in poltergeist activity that took place in and around Sao Paulo, Brazil, is among the best witnessed in modern times. Occurrences were observed by a police inspector, a priest, an attorney general, a number of school teachers, numerous journalists, and even some physicists. But the poltergeist attack on the household and family of Danci do Yoa Centro was one of the most savage and disturbing of all. Like the great flood of the Bible, it lasted for 40 days and 40 nights. The disturbances began on Sunday, April 12, 1959. Don Cid's wife, Doña Regina, and her maid, Francesca, were preparing the noon meal. His three children were playing in the front hallway of his Sao Paulo hacienda. Don Cid himself was seated in his favorite chair, reading a newspaper. Suddenly, there were two sharp thuds. Astonished, Don Cid called to his wife in the kitchen. "Was that the children? What are they doing?" "I don't know," Doña Regina called back. "I'm very busy. Can you go and see?" Don Cid sighed, put down his paper, and strolled out into the hacienda's main hallway. There he discovered his children cowering and almost in tears. "Father, somebody's throwing stones at us," said one of the children. Don Cid saw two stones lying on the floor. He bent over and picked them up. "Did you see who it was?" he asked. "No," said another child, shaking his head. "They just dropped down beside us." Frowning, Don Cid thought it over. This part of the hallway opened into the courtyard. Someone could have tossed the stones out from there. Maybe some friends or acquaintances were playing a practical joke. Don Cid went out into the courtyard, but he could see nothing amiss. He had been outside for only a couple of minutes when he heard shouts from the hacienda. Don Cid rushed back inside and discovered more stones and rocks falling in the front hallway, the drawing room, the pantry, and the kitchen. Indeed, they appeared to be dropping all over the interior of the hacienda, except, strangely, in a room where the children had taken refuge. While his household was terrified and took cover where they could, Don Cid remained calm and kept his head. He was not a man who got rattled easily. With great curiosity, almost with a scientific air, he tried to figure out the trajectories of the dropping stones. He examined the walls and ceilings for holes through which the objects might be coming. He found none. Puzzled, he next went the rounds of the rooms and made sure all the doors and windows were shut and locked. At this point, the rocks were not only dropping steadily, but they had also begun to ricochet off the walls. Others rolled about on the floors as if they were alive. Still others seemed to be bouncing up into the air like jumping jacks. Tensely curious about the strange phenomena, Don Cid caught a number of the stones in his hands. They were quite warm to the touch. After he had spent some time running about after the rolling, dropping, bouncing stones, he decided to call in some neighbors to witness the alarming events. Gathering to see the falling stones for themselves, these people could no more explain the odd bombardment than Don Cid could. They simply stood dumbfounded as the missiles continued to rain down on the luckless household. But strangely, nobody actually got hit by the falling stones. Don Cid put up with the disturbances, which waxed and waned in intensity for another 48 hours. Then, being a sincere Roman Catholic, he summoned a priest, Father Enrique de Moraes Matos, to try to exorcise a troublesome spirit. In the meantime, the poltergeist activity had become more varied. While occasional stones and rocks still were in evidence, the eerie force had added to its repertory flying cookery, loose vegetables, pots and pans, and other kitchen utensils. Like Don C, the priest was an inquisitive man, not given to panic, and he too became more intrigued and terrified by the disturbances. He carefully watched the trajectories of the missiles and noted their direction and velocity. Then Father Matos decided to conduct an experiment with the flying objects. Seeing an egg floating through one of Don C's rooms, he managed to seize it in his hands. Then he placed it in the refrigerator. Keeping a close eye on the various poltergeist events, he soon spotted an egg smashing against the wall of the butler's pantry. Oddly, it did not break, but seemed to flutter gently to the floor. The priest picked it up and noted that it was cool to the touch. Hastening to the refrigerator, he opened it and discovered that the egg he had placed on one of the shelves was no longer there. He surmised that somehow the evil force in the house had made it pass through the metal structure of the refrigerator and out into the house. The priest then thought it time to perform the rites of exorcism. When he had completed this brief service, the disturbances ceased for a time, but the poltergeist was evidently only napping and gathering force for a new attack. About a week and a half later, the activity commenced afresh. Stones once again rang down in Don C's hacienda. Even though Father Matos repeated his rites twice more, the poltergeist activity always started up again. At this stage of the case, suspicion had fallen on the young maid Francesca as somehow being the cause of the disturbances. Whenever the events commenced, she seemed to be in or very near the area in question, and in fact, the activity appeared to follow her as she moved from one place to another. Don Cid became convinced of her involvement and kept a sharp watch on the girl's comings and goings. But when he questioned her, Francesca vehemently denied having anything to do with the activity. At length, Don Cid had to admit to himself and others that he had been wrong and that the maid was guilty neither of any trickery nor of causing the events by any natural means. However, some local spiritualists came forward and claimed that the young maid possessed psychic and mediumistic powers of which she had no knowledge. Mischievous spirits, they said, had been attracted to Francesca's powers, and through her presence had caused the falling stones and other phenomena. By this time, the Sao Paulo newspapers had gotten wind of the strange occurrences and had sent reporters to the hacienda. Some of them had been struck by the fact that all through the disturbances, the uneducated girl had remained unconcerned and completely calm. Though some large stones had only narrowly missed her, she had gone on about her kitchen work. When asked why she had no fear, she replied that she just knew the objects would never hurt her, and they never did. Whatever the cause of this remarkable display of poltergeist activity, it ceased after 40 days and nights. Relieved, Don Cid and his unnerved family once again took up their normal lives in peace and quiet. While little is known of the girl Francesca, she left Don Cid's employ shortly after the occurrences. She fits well into the pattern of many poltergeist cases. A girl in her mid-teens, she was doubtless the focus person about whom the event centered. In some way, probably without her conscious knowledge, the girl was undergoing mental stress and building up powerful reserves of psychic energy. Finally, according to this theory of psychokinesis, the energy was released and caused the strange physical events. Poltergeist from Canada. In 1928, Mrs. Sims' family moved into a two-story house in one of the French quarters of Montreal. In style, the house was also French and had double parlor downstairs with all the bedrooms upstairs. Mrs. Sims herself was recently widowed and maintained her own household, but she paid regular visits to her family's house. The family consisted of Mrs. Sims' mother and father, her two older sisters, her five teenaged brothers, and her beautiful young teenage sister. At the time of the strange occurrences, the family had lived for about a year in the house. Mrs. Sims had been quite busy and had not found time to visit her family for several weeks. Then one day she got an emotional phone call from one of her older sisters, who informed her that odd things had been happening. Everything in the house that was capable of being tied in a knot had been tied in a knot. Mrs. Sims' first reaction was that someone was probably playing a practical joke on the family. Maybe one of the teenage brothers. But she held her tongue. Her sister said that she had not wanted to tell Mrs. Sims of the odd happenings, hoping that they would soon stop. Instead, they had gotten progressively worse. "Come and see for yourself," urged her sister. Mrs. Sims did so and found the whole house in a weird state. Just about everything was tied in knots. The drapes hanging across the doorway, the curtains at the windows, and most of the clothing in the closets. Moreover, it was the same kind of knot in every case. Her family then told Mrs. Sims that the knots had first appeared in the back sitting room, one that the teenage sister was in the habit of using during her leisure time. The girl had taken on the task of looking after her mother's every need, for the older woman's health had not been good. The members of her family also told Mrs. Sims that the mystifying knot tying, having begun downstairs, had progressed slowly to the upstairs room. In time, it had worked its way into their mother's wardrobe. In fact, the mother's finer pieces of clothing were becoming worn out from the tight, twisting knots, and as soon as family members struggled to untie the knotted garments, new knots appeared in them. When the phenomena progressed to one of the brothers' rooms, the boys determined to put the mysterious power to a test. There was a long runner or cloth on the young man's dresser that almost surely would be a target for the unseen knot tire. Before going to bed, the boys placed a number of heavy objects on the runner, among them wrenches from a toolkit, to see if the ghost could remove them and knot up the fabric. The ghost did just that. In the morning, the runner was found in one large, bunched-up knot. After a while, it became apparent that the disturbances were centering around the teenage daughter, Mrs. Sims' youngest sister. They even occurred when the girl was not at home. On one occasion, she visited some old friends of the family and left her hat on a table in their hallway. During the visit, the girl and the hostess talked about the strange goings-on in the family's house. Later, the hostess passed through the hallway and found the teenager's hat turned inside out and the hat band torn off. The knot-tying phenomena in the Montreal home were to last for 6 weeks. As the days passed and the knot-tying continued, the members of the family all grew increasingly tense and anxious. On one evening in particular, Mrs. Sims felt that the tension in the air was mounting towards some fresh outbreak of odd happenings. She and her father and mother were the only ones in the house. Sensing that they were all jumpy, Mrs. Sims suggested the three of them go to the dinette in the rear of the house and have a snack. This they did and spent about an hour there eating and chatting. When they emerged from the dinette, they were shocked at what they saw. Like a barricade before them was the largest knot of all. Standing some 3 feet high, the knot consisted of some large curtains called portières, which had hung in the hallway and served as inside doors, and a number of overcoats. The overcoats belonged to Mrs. Sims' five brothers, and they normally hung in a small hall off the dinette. Now they were looped and twisted together with the heavy portières into a giant tangled-up knot. As if the ghost had felt impelled to add a finishing touch to its work, an umbrella, which had stood in the front hall rack, was jammed upright into the middle of the tangle. Terrified at this eerie sight, Mrs. Sims muttered a hasty good night to her parents and fled from the house. While this was the largest knot to appear during the 6 weeks of the disturbances, another big one occurred a couple of days later. On this occasion, Mrs. Sims' mother woke to find a top blanket on her bed twisted up in a single knot in front of her face. After these two events, the frightened parents tried to move out and find somewhere else to live. However, the landlord refused to allow them to do so. They took the landlord to court to force him to break their lease, but the judge deemed there was not enough evidence to grant their request. Desperate now, the family decided to call on their church for help. Two priests arrived and blessed the house in an effort to exorcise the not-tying ghost. But this had no effect. It simply continued its work. By this time, news of the strange happenings had gotten into the papers, and people such as spiritualists, detectives, reporters, and others began to come to the house. Many offered to help. Others were merely curious. The disturbed family readily accepted the police officers' help. The detectives, and going through the basement, noticed a very bad odor there. None of the family, including Mrs. Sims, had ever smelled it before. The detectives then brought in some bloodhounds, thinking it possible that someone might have been murdered in the house and buried in the basement. One policeman even theorized that the angry spirit of the murdered person might be trying the nuts as some kind of warning or sign to the family. But no body was ever found in the basement. By this time, Mrs. Sims' father had grown furious at the antics of the ghost, and he ordered aloud one night never to touch any of his clothing. So far, it had not knotted up any of his garments, not even a necktie. The next morning, he found a pair of his best pants turned inside out with a tight knot in each of the legs. He also discovered his hat turned inside out with the band ripped off. In one of the empty rooms upstairs, the police conducted an experiment to test the powers of the mysterious knot tire. After locking all the windows in the room tightly, they draped a number of handkerchiefs over the long rod in the closet. Then they locked the door to the room, with one of the detectives retaining the key, and went downstairs to further discuss the strange affair with the family. After waiting about an hour, everyone went back upstairs and the door to the room was unlocked. The family knew what to expect, but the detectives were amazed to see that each handkerchief was tied in a series of tiny knots along its whole length. The detectives now tried a new idea to find out who was tying the knots. They told each family member to tie knots in some ropes they had brought with them. It turned out that the teenage girl was the only one to produce the kind of knot used by the ghost. From this, the detectives formed the opinion that somehow she had tied the knots unconsciously, and that some magic spell had been cast over her by an unseen force or power. During the final week of the hauntings, it happened that the famous magician and sleight-of-hand artist Blackstone was playing at a theater in Montreal. One evening on a stage, he mentioned this house, which has such a strange visitor, and he said that he would use his powers to remove the spell from the young girl. Presumably, Blackstone meant to do this at a distance without visiting the house. Whether the great magician ever did so, Mrs. Sims and the family never found out. Nevertheless, the next day, things came to a head. That evening, Mrs. Sims heard her older sister call her mother into the young girl's room. The mother went into the room. The others waited outside and could not hear what was said. Later, Mrs. Sims heard her older sister say, "The curtains were blowing wildly, and there seemed to be an eerie feeling about the place." A short time later, the mother left the girl's room in stony silence. Observing her, Mrs. Sims thought at the time that she seemed to be afraid to say anything for fear the young girl might hear her. Mrs. Sims and the others never did find out exactly what happened in the room that evening, for neither the mother nor the girl nor the older sister would ever discuss it. In any case, from that day on, there was no more mysterious knot tying, and the relieved and happy family resumed normal lives once again.